read for us tonight, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, gives us some information about the past, and it tells us that some of the things the Israelites did in the past are written for our learning so that we won't make the same mistakes they did. A humorous poster that I saw at one time had a picture of the Titanic. Now, why is the Titanic humorous? It just had the ship hitting an iceberg, and it said that your sole purpose in life may be to serve a warning to others. And so sometimes people do certain things, and it does serve as a warning to others, and certainly we need to learn from history. Verse 6 of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after things as they also lusted. So that's one of the benefits of looking at the past, is to be able to learn from others' mistakes. And that's one of the things Paul wants us to do. And he wants to capitalize on that approach here when he takes the Corinthians back to an Old Testament event. And it's one that we've studied in the past as we looked at the Israelites going, being delivered out of the land of Egypt and then going on their journey. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul reminds the Corinthians that they are running a race and that they are working toward a reward. And if they are going to do that, if you're going to run that race, if you're going to be serious about that pursuit, you have to run in a way that you want to win. Now, we've been watching the Olympics, and I saw one of the runners stepped out of bounds in a race and had to forfeit his medal because he stepped on the line. You know, that's probably very disheartening, but that's something that's part of the training. And they know that those are the rules when they go into that, and somebody disciplines themselves as they are going to want to win a race. And Paul tells us that we need to run in such a way that we can win the imperishable crown that God will give us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 1, he takes them back to their fathers, and he tells them, I don't want you to be unaware of what they experienced. And certainly, the period of time that he's talking about is something that would have been familiar to most Hebrews. They all realized that they were physical descendants of Abraham. In fact, this morning we read one passage where the Pharisees were very adamant to tell Jesus that we are Abraham's descendants, we are Abraham's children. But to be God's children, they needed to be not just physical descendants, they needed to be spiritual descendants. In Romans chapter 9, verse 6, for they are not all Israel who are descended from Israel. That is, it is not the children of the flesh who are children of God, but the children of promise are regarded as descendants. And so now, under the new covenant, the physical lineage was not important, that they were children of Abraham, but now they needed to be children of God. But Paul brings them back and reminds them of things that happened in the past. Abraham, they knew, was considered to be their father of the faithful. And in that sense, Paul, brings their attention to these things. In verses 1 through 4 of 1 Corinthians 10, he emphasizes that Israel has this oneness as a community, as a people of God, and they shared common experiences. And the word all is used 5 different times in these 4 verses, in verses 1 through 4 of 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Notice these times that he mentions here. First of all, it says they all had physical and spiritual privileges. He mentions them being under the cloud being the symbol of God's protection, the symbol of God's guidance. He said that they all passed safely through the sea, or to the other side of the Red Sea. He said that they all were immersed into the blessing and leadership of Moses as they journeyed on dry ground, and they were all fed by God. God supplied them the food, and they had the great physical and spiritual blessings. But verse 5 tells us that God was not well pleased with all of them. Despite the fact that God brought them together, He blessed them with deliverance, most of them failed spiritually. We know that generation, except for Joshua and Caleb, that came out of the land of Egypt, those two adults were the only two of the adults that came out of Egypt to go into the land of promise. So what was it that God was unhappy with? Well, it's certainly possible for people like these to be spiritually privileged and still not be pleasing to God, to be spiritually privileged and not be saved. And it's really a great tragic event. One of the most tragic things that you can read about, to me, when you read the Old Testament, is to see these people that had deliverance from Egypt and could look back and see what they were delivered from, but never to have reached the promised land because of their unbelief. And of course, that parallels to what we see many times with people today that do the same thing, and they turn their back on the God that can deliver them, and they don't accept His deliverance, or they fall away. It's very tragic. How can you be so foolish and so rebellious? And we like to think that when we look back, that we would not do the same thing, that we would not end up in the same condition. But is that really true? Well, let's look at what these sins were that they were guilty of. What is it that God says through Paul? 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now, these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after the evil things that they also lusted. So we should not lust after the evil things that they also lusted. Well, what are these things? He says in verse 7, do not become idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Verse 8, nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did. And one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. I think we'd all recognize that these things were what you would call a disqualifier, and evidence that, you know, these Israelites were losing their favored status with God when they were doing these things that they were clearly told not to do. All these things mentioned were forbidden by God. And we recognize these as sins. But then there's verse 10. Verse 10 of 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyers. Now, Paul has gone from preaching to meddling, right? Isn't that what we say sometimes? Some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now, these things happened to them as examples and were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. I would say that the majority of Christians would go back to this list and they say, well, I'd never participate in idolatry. Or I would not, you know, dream of committing sexual immorality. But what about complaining? Do we complain? What do we mean? Do we need to qualify that? What is meant by complaining? Let's talk about the sin of complaining. In James chapter 3 talks about the tongue a great deal. And James says in James chapter 3, verse 6, that the tongue is is a world of iniquity. And, you know, we've done lessons before on the tongue, and James tells us that there are a lot of things that can be committed by the tongue. A lot of sins can be committed by the tongue. You see this in the world every day. Lying. There's been a lot in the news about people lying today. People speaking blasphemies. People using profanity. It seems that you can't go anywhere without hearing profanity. Or so many television shows have gotten used to bleeping out profanity, but you don't have to use your imagination much to hear what it is that they're bleeping out. Gossip. And we recognize those as sins. I think most Christians do. Lying, blasphemy, profanity, those are things, and gossip. Those are things that, although gossip sometimes is harder for some people to control than these others, but we recognize those as being displeasing to God. But I don't know if I think of complaining as a sin in the way that I think of these other things as being sin. Is it on the same level? Well, you know, we live in a culture of criticism. You know, we talk about our freedom of speech, and people exercise speech, their freedom of speech, some with great passion, and people don't think much about speaking up and voicing criticism. People will do that, you know, very readily and complain about many things. For example, you know, Brendan and I today, I think both of our trips today ended up complaining about people tailgating us. And you probably just about every time you get in the car, you can complain about the way somebody else is driving. Or you can imagine that somebody is complaining about the way that you're driving because you're driving the speed limit and they're not. So we complain about that. We complain about how fast or how slow, in reality, our waiter brings our food. Or whether or not the picture on the HDTV is really good. Or, just a couple of days ago, and Ethan would not want me to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. The first thing he does when he goes down to FC is he locks his keys in his car at a drugstore. And you know, he has to pay a locksmith or somebody to come and unlock it. And he calls me, that costs $90. Well, I mean, that you've got two choices. You can leave your truck there with the keys locked in it, or you can pay the $90. You know, that's the kind of business that they run. You know, they know that you are a captive audience and that you really can't do anything about it. And they have the tools that you need to fix your problem. And that's what you're paying for. You know, you're paying for that expertise. He says, but it only took them 5 minutes to do it. He says, that doesn't matter. So when Barry comes out and fixes our air conditioner, it may take him 5 minutes. But if I don't pay him for it, I'm going to be hot. You know. So he got a little lesson on the way that the economy works. But, oh, it's terribly unfair. And Jarrell told me today that he had told everybody that same story. And he's so worried that we're going to make him pay for that out of his money. But totally unfair. Complaining about the way that all worked out. Well, don't lock your keys in your car. And I didn't get on to him about I've done the same thing. And I also was not happy with how much it cost me to fix the problem either. But we get upset about those things. We complain about whether or not the umpire or the official made the right call at the game. We even have careers where people are paid to be the critic, the restaurant critic or the movie critic or whatever. So we just have criticism all around us. And so for that reason, maybe we have a difficult time seeing complaining as a sin. But what does Paul say about that? Paul says they complained and they were destroyed by the destroyer. And when you look throughout the history of the people of Israel as they left the land of Egypt and go into the promised land, you see the word murmur. Complain, murmur and complain over and over and over throughout those scriptures. So they were delivered from the destroyer. If you want to think about Egypt being the destroyer. They were punished for being complainers. And we need to take that seriously and understand what God teaches us about it. Let's look at a few verses. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9. Be hospitable to one another without grumbling or without murmuring or complaining. So when we do something for somebody, let's not complain about it. James chapter 5, verse 9. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. The word here for complain or grumble is translated as murmur or to voice a grudge. The judge is at the door is a very interesting trait here. Don't grumble against each other, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. That tells me that God's listening. When somebody's at the door, that means that they're hearing what you say. So you need to be aware of that. He hears the way that we talk about one another. Philippians chapter 2, verse 14 and 15. Paul said, do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God, without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. Well, that sounds kind of difficult, because Paul, he ups the ante there. He says, do all things without complaining and murmuring. Whoa, he just said all. And that doesn't leave a lot of wiggle room, does it? To justify consistent complaining. But everybody else is complaining about it too. Paul said, do all things without complaining and disputing. He says the Christian who refrains from that is blameless and harmless. So, what does that say about the person who doesn't refrain from it? Well, he's causing harm, and he's to be blamed. It's as simple as that. So, refusing to complain is a mark of distinction from the rest of the world. Jude chapter 1, verse 16. Jude 1, 16. There are grumblers, complainers, walking according to their own lusts, and they mouth great swelling words, flattering people to gain advantage. Jude, in pointing out the characteristics of the heretics of his day, said that they were characterized by grumbling and complaining. It's a characteristic of the wicked, not a characteristic of those who are righteous. It's a characteristic of those who are not going to receive God's blessing. So we've seen several passages here about complaining and pointing out that it's a sin. Well, why is it a sin? I don't really know of an exception to this. Maybe there are some. You've heard the expression, misery loves company, and maybe sometimes people like to be around somebody that complains. I guess it depends on what it is that they're complaining about. But in general, nobody likes to be around that super negative person who's always complaining about something. But that's not what makes it wrong. I mean, it's being around something that makes us uncomfortable or it's perceived negatively in our society or socially, that's not what makes it wrong. We need to look at this a little bit deeper. Because there are some complaints that we can see in Scripture are legitimate, if you want to use the term complaint. In Acts chapter 6 and verse 1, we've mentioned this situation before. It says, now in those days when the number of disciples was multiplying, there arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution. And so what happened? Well, the apostle said, you all are forbidden from complaining, and because you're complaining, we're not going to pay any attention to what it is that you said. No, that's not what happened. What we see here is something that was a legitimate complaint. Let's look over at 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9. Be hospitable to one another without grumbling. This word complaint or this word grumble is the same word that's used by Peter here. And it would appear here in Acts chapter 6 that this was a legitimate complaint. They didn't condemn those who were voicing the complaint. What they did is they took steps to correct it. You know, there was an injustice or a neglect that was going on here, and they wanted to make sure that it didn't happen again. And sometimes injustices need to be exposed in order to be corrected. So we need to remember it's not a sin to point out faults and to expose error as though to bring about a change or to bring about repentance. But what we're talking about in regard to what was condemned in the lives of the Israelites doesn't fall in that category at all. Most of our complaints don't fall into the category of being really constructive or to bring about repentance. The complaint that's forbidden is that displays a lack of forbearance and a lack of love. And in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 2, I'll start in verse 1, I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Now, there's a lot that's said there, and it's a lot that has to do with attitudes toward one another. And when we think about forbearance and we think about patience and lowliness, how is that displayed? How do we know that we embody those traits? Well, when we react to people in a negative way and we constantly complain, it probably shows that we're not as lowly and forbearing and patient as we ought to be. What's our first response when somebody displeases us? Often our first move is to go complain to somebody else. Go find somebody else that agrees with us or we think will agree with us. So we can tell everybody what it is that person did to offend us. Many times we impugn motives. We make judgments. You know, there's been a lot on the TV about Ryan Lochte and the things that he did in impugning, you know, officials over in Rio. And what happened was he said he exaggerated. And he told his mom the terrible things that happened to him over there after he had gotten drunk and destroyed a bathroom. But he didn't talk about that part. He talked about the way that he was mistreated, and he overly exaggerated, he said. But his mom gets a hold of that, and she tells everybody how horrible, how dangerous it is over there in Rio. And, you know, it's just been a big, big mess on the news. So you talk about impugning motives and making judgments. Here's people that reported on a story and made assumptions about things without really knowing what the facts of it were, and I don't know that anybody really knows all the facts yet, but the point here is that that's not an isolated incident. That was one that was very much promoted because it's in the news, but you know, there's things like that happen among brethren all the time that are not newsworthy enough to make it on Channel 13, but the same thing is happening where people will jump to a conclusion, and one of my dad's favorite corny expressions, of which he had many, was some people, the only exercise they get is jumping to conclusions. And that's true. We impugn and we make judgments without considering the call to forbear. And if you just want to put forbear, simply just slow down. Slow down and think about what it is that you're saying. Think about what it is that you're doing. And how would you like to be treated in the same situation? Think about how it is you're treating someone. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Tell us, therefore, be imitators of God as dear children and walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and given Himself for us as an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. Be imitators of God and walk in love. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Great chapter on love tells us that love suffers long. It's kind. Love does not envy. Does not rejoice in evil, but rejoices in the truth. So are we embodying those kinds of things before complaining comes out of our mouth? So complaining about others many times displays a lack of forbearance and love. Also, complaining about circumstances impugns the goodness of God, and it displays ingratitude. There are those that live with a negative perspective on just about everything. And, they're really showing everybody what they think about God when that's their perspective on everything. Sometimes people wouldn't complain about another person, but they constantly complain about their circumstances, as if there's nothing harmful about that. But, have you ever met somebody that even when they're met with blessing after blessing, they meet those with a, yeah, but? If that doesn't sound familiar to you, let me give you a few examples. Isn't the weather nice today? Yeah, but I heard it's going to rain tomorrow. It's cold where I live. I hear you got a raise. Yeah, but it's still not enough for me to pay my bills. I see you're doing better. Yeah, but I still can't sleep at night. My back hurts. My insurance won't pay my bills. How do you react to blessings when they are pointed out to you? Well, James gives us some options. James chapter 5, verses 13 and 14. You're in trouble? What should you do if you're in trouble? Let's complain about it. Let's post it on Facebook for everybody to see. Is any of you in trouble? He should pray. Is any of you happy? Let him sing songs of praise. Is any one of you sick? He should call the elders to pray over him and anoint him with oil in the name of the Lord. So James gives us options on what to do in different situations. And you notice that none of those things say, well, you should complain loudly and long about all those things and hope somebody will hear you. Complaining about circumstances really ignores the goodness of God and shows ingratitude. Complaining or having a negative spirit also can display a lack of contentment. Philippians chapter 4, verse 11. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You notice what Paul says, and remember where Paul's writing this from. Writing it from prison. But he notes that they should think on good things and that they should meditate on the blessings of God. And maybe if they spent more time giving thanks to God, they would be able to overcome a complaining and negative attitude because they're thinking about their blessings. We live in a very materialistic society. And there are things all around us that are saying you need something else. You need something better. You need a better car. You need a better house. And there's all these home makeover shows that show you how much better your house would be or how much better off you would be if you went somewhere else. Hebrews chapter 13 tells us to let our conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For He Himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? Don't covet. Don't wish to be rich and have a negative attitude and never be happy with what it is that you have, always thinking that you have to have something else. I've heard so many stories about people that grew up poor that never realized that they were poor. How can that be? There's also people that say they grew up poor and they were very aware that they were poor. A lot of that has to do with your upbringing and the way that your parents raised you. And we grew up not having a lot of things, and I just thought it was because my dad was cheap. But he didn't complain about, well, I wish I had this or I wish I had that. And I never heard my mom complain about, you know, the color of her refrigerator, that we didn't have as big a TV as somebody else had. I was aware that other people had nicer things than we did. But I didn't live in an atmosphere of grumbling and complaining about the lack of physical things. It was a home that, where my father tried to teach me contentment. And it's difficult. It's difficult for people today to learn contentment because we live in a society that is all about immediate gratification and 90-day famous cash. Complaining displays a lack of contentment. And complaining also displays selfishness. And there are so many things, so many sins that are rooted in selfishness. It's why people steal. It's why people lie. It's why people commit immorality. It's why people are negligent in their duties to their family or to God. And sometimes selfishness is a reason for people for refusing to even become a Christian in the first place because they're too selfish to admit that they're wrong or they're too selfish to turn their back on sin and give up things that they shouldn't participate in anymore. So much rooted in selfishness. But certainly selfishness is a big reason why people complain. Philippians chapter 2, verse 4. Think about these two verses that we're going to read here. Philippians 2, verse 4 and Philippians 4, verse 4. Let each one of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. So looking out for the interest of others, that's the opposite of selfishness. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Can you be looking out for somebody else's interest and can you be rejoicing in the Lord always? When you are a murmurer, have you ever known of a rejoiceful murmurer or a happy complainer? Maybe somebody that's happy to complain, but not a happy complainer. They don't go together. So many things, so many sins are rooted in selfishness. In Deuteronomy chapter 1, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 26. The message here says, nevertheless, you would not go up, but you rebelled against the commandment of the Lord your God. And you complained in your tent and said, because the Lord hates us, He has brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites, to destroy us. Is that true? They kept complaining over and over. And now Paul is telling the Corinthians, don't make these same mistakes. Don't be these complainers that you see, who are your ancestors? What are we like? Are we sitting around in our proverbial tents complaining instead of rising up and following where God leads? Israel was showing others their attitude about God. What they were showing others is that God hates us. That's what they were saying. If people were listening to what they were saying, oh, God's taken us out of Egypt and now He's left us out here to die. God's given us nothing but manna and quail to eat. You've brought us out here in the wilderness to die. Look, they're following behind us. What are we going to do? Pharaoh's going to kill us. We'd be better off going back to Egypt. At least there we had better food to eat. Over and over. So what does that say to all the other nations? They think God hates them. What does it say today when Christians look like they're the most miserable people on the earth? And they're not content. And they complain about everything. I don't want to give the message to the world that God hates me. Because that's not true. That is the opposite of the message that we would want to give. We would want to show that God loves us. How can we show others that God loves us? Well, we could stop complaining. And we could start rejoicing. So, you know, our attitudes are very crucial. And a lot of times we give a lot of attention to our outward actions. And our outward actions really fall prey to an inventory of our inward self. Our attitudes, our inward attitudes, are going to exhibit themselves outwardly. Even if you try to protect what you say and the way that you act, it's going to come out. And we can rationalize, as many people do, but let's not overlook the goodness of God. We need to be thankful. We need to be those that have hearts of gratitude and show that in the way that we talk and be thankful and watch ourselves, because this is a problem. It can be a problem for me, and I'm sure it can be a problem for others, to be too negative. Yes, we need to point out problems and we need to fix problems when it's appropriate, but I think you can see the difference between, you know, constructive criticism and an attitude and a lifestyle of chronic complaining. So we can work on those things and use the advice that God gives us to show others that we are happy to be His children, that we are not tied up into what the rest of the world sees as making them happy. But we can be content knowing that our treasure is laid up in heaven. And these things will be useful to you, and it will give you a reason to talk about Christ to others, and that they can see your contentment, they can see your joy, and they'll be interested in having that same inheritance that you do. If we can help you in any way to do that, we'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.